individual. We go on into that which lies beyond the present according to the way we have lived here. And we are not going to find that death changes any of our basic characteristics. If we were foolish in life, death will not make us wise. If we were selfish in life, death will not make us generous. If we were criminal in life, death will not make us virtuous. Death may present us with certain problems to help us again to continue the redemption of ourselves. But death is not the possibility of walking out on unfinished business. We take the unfinished business with us, and in due time return with unfinished business to a world suffering from unfinished business. It goes on till it's solved, and the solution always begins with ourselves. Because in the large nature of everything, we go and we come. And those who are closest to us see us no more. And those we have never known may be close to us. But in all instances, in all conditions, it is the integrities that become the basis of enduring relationships. Those who are true friends are honorable. Those who have ulterior motives have never real friendship. Now, there's been talk about limiting the income of people so that no one can earn so much or more than a certain amount. This has an advantage in some ways if it can be enforced, but wherever it is enforced, there's going to be criminal interventions. There are going to be ways found to break the rule. If a man is told that he can only earn $25,000 a year, he will hire a specialist, two lawyers, and a crooked judge to make sure that he can have more. We cannot stop him by legal means. We can stop him only by integrities. We cannot prevent the individual from being selfish simply by putting him in jail. We cannot cause him to be no longer a criminal by imprisoning him or condemning him. We may be able to get him out of the way of society, but in doing this, society has not solved a problem. It has only punished a person. The great problem is not how to punish a criminal, but why it is necessary to have this type of situation in our cultural life. It's interesting to note that two civilizations that we know about had no medium of exchange. One was the Mayas of Central America, and the other was the Incas of Peru. They were both reasonably advanced cultures, strong in arts and sciences, with good medical skills, with considerable understanding of astronomy, mathematics, music, and all these things, but without a medium of exchange. They didn't, as a result of not having a medium of exchange, when Pizarro asked the Inca of Peru what they did with criminals, the Inca looked at him kind of sadly for a minute and said, "I really don't know. We don't have any." The removal of the medium of exchange, or the absence of it, reduced a great deal of pressure, reduced most of the jealousies, the conspiracies, the cartels, the monopolies, and the private feuds, most of which had something to do with gain or loss. And with gain or loss no longer considered as needed or practical, a whole area of private sin, crime, and mistake was cleared up altogether. Because all these things ultimately, if not immediately, drift into these major eras of civilization. What I think we should learn more than anything else is to change abuse to use. The world is full of things that need to be done. The world is in great need of working together as a collective structure to make sure that we have food for unborn generations, that all possibilities of war are lost. Because war is always a gain, it is some structure of ambitions in which millions of the helpless die to maintain the arrogance of a few. The moment we really begin to think about humanity, There's lots of things we can do with money to help everything that needs helping. The reforming of education, the development of a new way of life in which honor is accorded to those who have given the most to the common good, where every individual is proud of what he is doing and maybe restores the old guild system, in which the individual who became a first-class carpenter was just as good in the eyes of society as a first-class theologian or a doctor. For each was a master of his own craft. He had earned the respect of his fellow members, he was honored by them, and was considered to be a person of sufficient importance to be able to hold up his head before kings and dukes. If we have achieved something, we do not have to depend upon money for reputation or for recognition. Many of the great achievements of history have been made by the poor. But the poor who have physically little have sometimes given us an immortal value to be carried forward into future ages. So here we are with nations that can't read and write, with many health problems still unsolved, with congestion on the freeways, with our jails overflowing, with practically every public resource exploited. We have things to do. Here and there, I have noticed little accomplishments. Some town that was tired of being exploited by itself rose against the problem and solved it. They solved it with just plain thoughtfulness. Solved it by being kind instead of critical. Solved it by talking creatively rather than gossiping. And little by little, the control of ourselves makes us into people who are capable of contributing to essential progress. Then if we have little, we use it wisely. And the dollar from the man who has only a dollar is just as great as a million from another person. It is what we give, what we have, what we do that we should be proud of. What we are contributing to the advancement and the good of all that lives. There's no longer any time for all sectarianism, all the competition and struggles of creeds, all the fightings of beliefs, all the definite determination to convert somebody else to our opinions. These things are no longer necessary. They never were. And most of these problems have their roots in an economic situation. Money is at the root of most of the corruptions in philosophy, education, and theology, just as much as in business. So we have a big problem, the big dope problem. We are doping ourselves to death with dollars. We find that we are willing to pay a vast sum of money and commit crime to get the dollars for dope. We are doing the same thing on an economic level. We break every rule of human society to get the profit. And the profit makes us feel 10 feet tall until the headache comes. Also, we find that this process of dope or narcotics is undermining our interest in doing anything better. Little by little, we live only to have more of these great moments in which we think we are giants and wake up with a headache the next day. The wealthy have the same headaches and have the same problems. And, strangely enough, many of them are now making a partnership with the narcotics, and the wealth is going in that direction. Everything is in a turmoil. And I don't want to leave at all the impression of being fatalistic about this. I'm not. I think the answer is so glorious that it's almost impossible to imagine its possibilities. And that is, it's so wonderful to realize that these mistakes cannot go on forever. And that out of all these mistakes and all this suffering is going to come the great solution we've all been seeking. We will never get better until we can no longer be comfortable and remain worse. We will never solve problems until the problems annoy us beyond control. Here we have the great problem of wealth. It is the problem of our race. It was brought with us in our own subconscious. The gods did not give it to us. The gods gave us only nature, and we have set up various real estate transactions involving it. But the main facts remain exactly the same. We are now getting to the point where all our shams are falling apart. We are getting to the point where we don't believe each other or trust each other in many instances. We are disillusioned with entertainment. We are disillusioned with literature. We are afraid of science. And we know that we are bankrupt for the most part so far as philosophy is concerned. The modern generation has very little to offer. Therefore, all these things are becoming so uncomfortable that we can no longer endure them. We do not want to sit down every evening to some miserable television production that offends us before we're halfway through it. We do not want to be exploited every time we go to a store. We do not want to pay twice for everything we buy. We don't want to be subject to all kinds of exploitation. We don't wish to see the inflation going the way it is. All has to do with money. And it all has to do with what the rich man has said, namely that whatever we charge, somebody will buy it. And he's probably quite true. We will buy anything, even if it costs the last dime we have. But the things that we cannot buy are the things we need the most. We need the integrity to prevent us from buying what we don't need. We are a little bit like Thoreau in Walden. We are really simple creatures. We wish security. We wish an education for our children. We wish a constructive career and good workmanship. These things are available to all if we will stop all kinds of misrepresentations and the singing of songs that have no rhythm. We've got to get out of this idea that these things can go on forever and that nothing lies ahead but more of the same. Now we are beginning to realize something else that is interesting. There is a gradual rising of organized resistance to corruption. There is a gradual arising, an organized determination not to support that which we do not believe. It is showing here and there. Books are coming on it. People are talking about it. Religious groups are emphasizing it. Even politicians occasionally refer to it with a hesitant note. But all the way along, there is a feeling that a universal reformation is at hand. Now, if this is true, if we're really beginning to feel that the time has come for a major change, what is the cause of this new feeling? The answer is money. It's not the money we're going to make off of it, but the money situation we can't stand as it is. We are gradually realizing that we are being constantly exploited by each other for profit alone. And it's gradually coming to our attention that we're getting a little tired of it. We're no longer willing simply to be the spenders for somebody else's advantage. We are watching the bargains. We're watching the money markets go up and down. The thing is getting more ridiculous every day. And we are gradually awaking to the situation that we are the slaves of a monetary system. That we are the slaves of individuals who corrupt that system to their own advantage. That money as a medium of exchange is no longer even permitted. It has something on it all the way along in the form of ulterior motive. Every transaction is geared not to use but to profit. Every accumulation has been to some degree at the expense of others. Now, we don't mean that all of this is bad or that we should be blamed for it. It isn't that. But we are gradually reaching the point where we should outgrow it, where we might be perfectly willing to believe our ancestors couldn't do any better. There is no reason why we can't do a little better as we go along. We have more advantages, we have more understanding, we have more knowledge than any other generation, and we're in the worst condition of them all. This cannot continue and doesn't need to. And the answer to that is the recognition that wealth can no longer be the guiding, driving force behind civilization. It may be there, we need it. We don't have any desire today to carry the little pig to market any more than we did 2,500 years ago. Wealth is a medium of use. Wealth is a good servant, but a terrible master. It's here to be used to make life more convenient and not to be corrupted. It is the little group sitting under the buttonwood tree in lower North Manhattan that is held to be responsible for the miseries of mankind. This is not actually true. The real truth of the matter is we have allowed money to become a thing in itself, a value just simply as money, and that the man is rich who can clip a coupon. This is not true. All of these things are simply little emotional tingles in our subconscious. The mere fact that we have these things may be protective of our needs, but the moment we begin to overlook everything else in the cause of them, we're in trouble. Money is no use unless we know what to do with it and how to use it most advantageously for the good of all we know and all that are concerned. General world financial situations are rather beyond the average private citizen's comprehensions at the moment, but the fact remains that our world is a mass of wastefulness, that everything is trying to make something more out of someone else, and all authority is working back and forth, living off of the ignorance of the majority. Now, this you just can't have. And wealth should be the thing to break it up. We should be using money to liberate people from the delusion of money. We should be using it to educate them in the values that they must carry with them, not only through this life, but beyond. When we send a child to college, we should not be thinking, shall we send him and make him a doctor, a lawyer, or some of these learned professions, because they pay better. We should give him the education that will enable him to develop himself, his own internal hopes, his aspirations, his convictions. He should be given a chance to release something, for the growth of a people comes through the release of the internal potential of the citizens. Every member of a human society has something to give, but for the most part, the rest of that society doesn't want it. It wants only that part which will enable these societies to exploit each other till the end of time. But actually, money should be used to make certain that the better things of life are made available to those who are willing to earn them, and that all individuals should be given sufficient education to assist him in determining the difference between right and wrong. There's no reason why we should graduate from our greater university today persons who do not know whether they're good or bad, and for the most part don't care. So we've got to move it from an economic foundation to an ethical foundation. And the ethical use of money would be a tremendous help. It would be the same thing as the ethical use of medicine. The medical sciences and arts are great help if they're not exploited. We can find great and wonderful things in all the discoveries we have made, but we must from within ourselves develop that power which can coordinate these various discoveries and dedicate them to the service of the human need. We must do that which is necessary to protect and advance the reason for our own existence. We are a world that is becoming more populous all the time, and a world in which the threats of destruction are increasing daily. These things have to be faced. Money is not going to pay for them. Money will not pay for peace. It will pay for armament to make sure that there is war. Money will not pay for health, but it may, under proper usage, assist in the development of knowledge that will help. Money used properly can advance every form of knowledge that man is concerned with and solve most of the social problems of society. It can answer many problems of family disputes and discords. It can affect the relation of parent and child. It can affect everything constructively. But it must be a knowledge which teaches us how to use constructively the tools of our human race. We must find ways of doing the things that need the doing. and whether these bring great profit or no profit. That which profits humanity is far more important than the profit that goes into the bank. So we have this problem of wealth, not as a menace, really, but as a challenge. The individual who can outgrow the control of what he has and become dedicated to what he is will do a great deal for himself and others. We could be a much happier people if all of our outside addictions were controlled by our inside convictions. And if we do not have enough convictions to prove this, then we are not educated, and facilities should be available to make certain that we gain the proper schooling. No one should graduate from school who doesn't know the difference between integrity and profit, who doesn't know the difference between cooperation and competition. And no one should graduate from anything who does not realize that competition is the death of trade. All these things have to work together. We're on one little planet, kind of floating around on a cosmic mothball somewhere in space. We have been here for some time, and we'd like to remain a little longer. But to do this thing, we've got to realize that we're castaways in space. And while someday we may wander around on Uranus, we may not find it very habitable. We are here to learn to get along with each other and become what we have never been able to be as yet, and that is one happy family. A family in which everybody is equally interested in the good of everybody. That everyone is hoping the best for everybody. That we are all delighted at the success of other people, if it is right. If we are doing things well. And if we find someone with a great idea, that we can get behind them and help them. There's no reason why we should finance every scheme there is and be hesitant to the bitter end to advance or finance anything that is contributing to public good. Everything is in terms of how much. And now we need to know how much is there that we can possibly do and learn. The inside of the human nature is a very subtle thing. Somewhere locked inside of ourselves is a mechanism superior to anything that man can ever invent. Some people think that we have the only living computer, but actually the computer is an invention of one faculty of the mind and is going to go bad ultimately simply because it is invented for profit rather than for use. Wherever the use is a sort of slogan and the individual invents only for the advancement of wealth, the answer is not there. But there is in someone, in everyone, a center of consciousness that is a more or less a cosmic computer, if you want to say so. It is something in there that knows more than the human being as a person is likely to know for a long time. There is a spark of that eternal divinity, that nameless life and light, which is in every creature that comes into the world. This something which is the great morality, the great integrity, a tremendous force, a law without words, a law that is supported only by its own righteousness. In each person there is a potential. There is art, there's music, there's literature. We are all endowed with internal resources more valuable than anything that we can attain through schooling. Now, the purpose of education, as understood to the ancients, was the release and strengthening of these inner resolutions. We were supposed to use the word educo for education to its Latin and Greek meaning, educo, to draw forth, to bring forth, to make known. Whereas today education is to cram in and prevent the individual from doing any thinking for himself at all. We wish to impose upon each child the fallacy from which we are suffering. We want them to make identically the same mistakes that we do. And we take the quiet thought that nobility will be gone by the time our descendants decide how wrong we were, and also are in the same spot themselves. Now, this isn't because everybody intends to be dishonest. It's just short-sightedness and a lot loss of values. When religion was important in the world, we had a lot of despotism, but we also had a vast storehouse of integrity that is lost to us. Religion was something that put a divine power above our human purposes. Religion thought in terms of a divine purpose, a divine reason for things, beyond our common mistakes and misinstructions. And that some way, through prophets, sages, revelations, mysticism, and so forth, this divine plan could be communicated to humanity. And that the gods of all ages have spoken through their sages and saviors for the instruction and improvement of humanity. We have received from all of them the golden rules, commandments, and all kinds of admonitions as to how they should live as persons, how each individual should cultivate a certain conviction within himself which makes him worthy to be considered a religious person or be dedicated to the universal purpose for things. All these inner impulses are being slowly smothered out. We don't give any chance anymore for the individual to be himself. We impose upon him by intention, we mean the best in the world, only that which will give him physical security. And yet every day we see this physical security fade, getting worse and less obvious, and failing before us because of the intemperances of our own natures. Therefore, there has to be something better. All things physical are the instruments of that which is transphysical. Everything that is commonly used is an instrument for a secret purpose. Our eyes are not to just see things with, or to watch television with. Our eyes are to help us understand life, to understand nature. They give us the faculty of power of feeding all kinds of secret inner impulses, desires, and appetites that are of themselves noble. Our ears are to hear good things and not the noise of rock music. Our various faculties and sensory perceptions open to us worlds far beyond our understanding. We can share in the wisdom of all time. We can accept the virtues of the past. We can grow with everything that has ever grown, unless we stunt ourselves by means of a type of living which shuts out everything that isn't investable at 9%. We must get out of this idea that all success is in terms of profit. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole earth and loses his own soul? People just don't think it's nicer, just don't know. Don't quote that anymore because it is embarrassing. But there is a tremendous truth, and a lot of people need to be embarrassed. But they won't accept it. They will never do it that way. But in some way, through the pressure of circumstances, through the breaking down of a system that has already failed, we may come closer to the recognition of that system which is bound to succeed. That out of all of this problem, the problem of our humanity is more or less at stake. We are human. Humanity means, in a projection of the word, a humane treatment. It means fellowship, kindness, cooperation, generosity of spirit, gentleness of life. As humans, we are not supposed to still suffer from the wars of the jungle, which we are assumed to have left behind. We are no longer part of that which lives by killing, or by destroying, or fighting for territory. All these things belong to a form of life, theoretically, that we have outgrown. Therefore, as human beings, it is our natural state to get along together peacefully and in a friendly way. We are simply human, and the basis of our humility and humanity is cooperation. We are the first creature that we know that has become aware of the fact that we can live together in peace. The only creature that has put goals above food and reproduction. We are the only creatures that have lifted their eyes to something superior and realized that in some strange way we are kindreds of the angels. We know better. We sense that we have been given something which we are supposed to use wisely and lovingly and skillfully. And if we can understand that, then all the things that we come to, all the minerals in the earth, all the plants in the ground, all the various forces of nature around us are there to help us. They are part of an environment, but it is not the forces of the environment that mold us, but it is our own part that molds them. If the forests do not change us primarily, but we can destroy the forests forever. We are also to be benefited if the forests remain. And in taking care of us, the forests also take care of hundreds of other living things. Therefore, protection, love, and understanding, all these advance purpose. Greed destroys. That which is selfish destroys itself to the end of time. Therefore, it is time for thoughtful people to give it further consideration. We are here because we firmly and gently believe that we are trying to find a better way of life. We are searching for those truths that survive the decays of nations. We are searching for a way of harmlessness, with mercy for all, charity for all, and malice toward none. This type of thinking is very essential to those who intend to try and be better people, because with all our efforts to be truly spiritual, to be truly wise, to be truly practical humanitarians, there still is this nagging within ourselves of the damage that wrong training has already done. Where it has damaged, we must recognize the damage and correct it. If we have been brought up incorrectly, then we must rise above the mistakes of the past, whether of this generation or former generations, and live into the virtues of the future. These are the things that we must really do, and if we do them, we will find that every medium that we have is no longer something evil that we have to fight. It is something beautiful that we have to use, and which we have deformed by our own selfishness. All natural resources are good. The deforming is done by the negative thoughts of human beings. So we don't want those anymore if we can help it. We want all our resources to be used for the good of us all, and in so doing, to accomplish the end which creation intended, and which creation is strong enough to attain, regardless of our opinions. Therefore, wealth is first of all inner wealth of understanding, giving us the wisdom and the skill to use our outward possessions according to the laws of creation and distribution and redemption. These things being true, we'll get along all right.